Back together again, you and I chatting it up. Busy Tuesday, the 15th of April, 2025. Tax day right here on Connecticut Today. I kicked off the show with my view that the $3.5 million spent yearly on text messaging for prison inmates in the state is well worth it and should be maintained and not eliminated. Connecticut Inside Investigator reporter Mark Fitch dropped by to chat about that proposed soda and sweetened beverage tax being considered at the state capitol. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio talked about tax day 2025 in Connecticut. We also heard from CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum on two key legal actions facing the Trump White House.
I would hazard to say that most of us, not all of us, because you don't know what the dynamics are with families, but, you know, I would hazard to say that most of us have never been in jail. Most of us, especially you folks that listen to this program, and thank you so much, have never been incarcerated. Now, maybe you ended up in the dry-out tank one night back in the days you were sowing your wild oats. But I would guess that most of us here, the guys and gals we talk with every Monday through Friday from 2 to 6, have never been in jail for any extended period of time. And likewise, I would guess that most of us, but not all of us, have never had a parent or an extended or near relative in jail. So we meaning you and I, the chat together here, we don't really know what it's like to not be able to just communicate with someone when we want to. I, for one, don't know how I would have ever handled it if, for example, my son ended up in jail or my wife at the time or my mom or my dad. So you know where I'm going at here. A lot of us, when we talk about jail policy and prison policy, we're kind of pontificating without knowing anything. We're watching from the upper deck. We've got the cheap seats in the upper deck. We're not down by the field on the first or third base line. We don't rank with those people who actually have a vested interest here. And the reason I bring this up is because this is a head scratcher to me. And it illustrates the weirdness this state has with how it decides to spend money and how this state will say, well, we have to do this and we have to do that and we need to do this. And Connecticut values, they roll out the Connecticut values. Bah, 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 bah. We hear that from Justin Ulliker. We hear that from William Tong. We used to hear that from Governor Dan Malloy. Thank God he's gone. No offense, but oof. And I bring this up because word is, and this has been picked up by a couple of outlets here, that Governor Ned Lamont wants to drop a program. He says it is too expensive to continue to provide a free texting service to Connecticut inmates. Texting, e-messaging, you know what that is. You're not directly talking. You're sending text messages. Well, apparently the state has been doing this since about 2020 or 2021, and the cost has been absorbed by the state, okay? Now, the governor says, hey, this is getting too expensive. It's $3.5 million a year. Okay, I understand the governor's a business guy. I understand everybody is tugging at his coattails. They want money for this and money for that. But this system was launched in 2021, and there's a pretty good story about this. I urge you to read it in the Connecticut Mirror and ask yourselves this, because the immediate response I'm getting to a question that I put on our Facebook page, facebook.com/voiceofCT, is that, oh, yeah, drop this service, $3.5 million, screw the convicts. Really? So would you feel that way? Would you say, hey, let's get rid of this program if you had a daughter in jail? If you had a son in jail? If your mom or dad were incarcerated for whatever reason? People do bad things and they go to jail. So the governor says, hey, this is getting too expensive. It's $3.5 million a year. We can't pay for it. No, governor, with all due respect, we can pay for it. You don't want to pay for it. And I think this is egregious. I do. And I'm probably going to part ways with my right-leaning brethren and sister-in on this. We need to keep this program. Maybe there's a better price that whatever company does this. I don't think it's a state program per se. It's a, probably subcontracted by some telecom vendor or subcontractor. But let me see if I get this straight. Here is a program, if you read these stories, where inmates say, hey, it was hell in prison, but at least I was able to text message my friends and my parents or whatever. And my gut tells me here, folks, the cost of this program is because these messages are filtered. I don't think they let you run a street gang from prison, but I digress. So we're actually going to take a program that, according to what I read here and what I read the first time around when this was put in place, that is keeping some of these prisoners sane while they're locked up because they could talk to their husbands and wives and girlfriends and boyfriends and moms and dads and daughters and sons and kids. So we're going to get rid of that? Why? Because it's expensive? Oh, let me see. The program is $3.5 million. All right, maybe by the standards of that, that's expensive. But at the same time, we're ready to hand state employees a $400 million raise? Really? We're going to do that? We spend hundreds of millions of dollars on migrant care, but we don't want to allow prison inmates to communicate? And I warn you right now, if you're going to call me up today and say, well, screw the prisoners, they don't need this, would you say that if it was your son or daughter? Would you? Would you say that if it was your mom or dad? Would you? Would you say that if it was your brother or your sister? Would you? Say, hey, it's too expensive? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Talk or text, and the question is up at our Facebook page, facebook.com/voiceofct. Do you agree or not with Governor Ned Lamont's push to eliminate a $3.5 million program for free text messaging to Connecticut prison inmates? Before you answer this, think long and hard. Think. What if that was your son or daughter in prison? Would you be so cavalier and callous to immediately say, nah, too expensive, screw them? See, I wish people could better explain to me how this state decides what to spend money on, because some of it doesn't make sense. And if we just had a little more discipline here. And, of course, they have to go on bended knee there to the stuff that's contractual. I get it. But we're looking soon at $300 or $400 million in Cadillac benefits and pay increases for state employees. Why? Because it's in the contract. We're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars to take care of illegals and migrants. Why? Because our leaders say, hey, come to Connecticut. We'll take care of you. No reason to leave. A lot of rich people need their lawns cut. We know about that. But yet, yesterday it was a new tax because we're $1 million in the hole for paying kids school lunches and breakfast. And today, now the governor, and I don't think this is going to fly because it looks like his party doesn't want it, nor should it. They want to eliminate a text messaging system for the prisons that admittedly costs $3.5 million a year. So why not have that for the inmates? Good God, we waste money on more stuff here. You don't mean to tell me? You don't mean to tell me there's more than $3.5 million in waste somewhere in the budget? Come on, stop. Stop. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. So again, this is a text messaging system that I guess filters and keeps an eye on all the text messages from the 11,000 or so prisoners here in Connecticut to and from family and friends and loved ones. So you're going to get rid of this? Really? Now, I guess they can still make free phone calls, but listen, generations change. A lot of times, the text messaging is how people choose to communicate. It doesn't make sense. And again, the bonding commission the other day, the governor gives his okay. We just borrowed another $600 million, and they're worried about $3 million for text messages? For incarcerated folks, for prisoners? I don't get this. Well, maybe I do. Maybe they think, hey, we have to abide hard on the little stuff so we can pay the big stuff. I don't know. I don't know. Boggles my mind. Bob and Trumbull's here. Bob, what's up with you? How are you?
I'm fuming.
Yeah.
Why don't you just give these incarcerated people
yeah.
four stamps a month,
yeah.
a paper and pencil, and they can write. Oh, wait, maybe they can't read and write, these
so,
people that are in jail.
Yeah.
Oh, well, and then get rid of the cable TV they've got, too.
Yeah. Hey, Bob, thanks. It's not 1960 anymore, okay? Thanks. Thanks so much. I'm telling you, I've got a short fuse on this. I just... do me a favor. Just think about this. If it was your son or your daughter, not those other people, not those people. I'm talking about if it was your son or your daughter. And you know what? Well, what are you saying this for? Well, I'll tell you why I'm saying it. Because I'd rather spend $3.5 million on this than keep pouring out free stuff to illegals in this state. I'm sure some of the people, if not most of the people incarcerated now are, not all of them are, I'm sure, but I'm sure most of them are actual citizens. Hello? My God, people, show a little humanity. Big John in Stratford. John, how are you?
Hey, Paul, you're nuts, man.
Why?
These guys are in jail for a reason. They
yeah.
break the law. You should be treated to straighten your life out. You have to go to jail. And it should be hard.
Maybe extending a little some text messages with loved ones in the middle of the night, maybe that helps them through this.
No, the society's going downhill. They're having weak people have weak babies. Everything's going cockeyed. It's you're all wrong. Make rules, stick to them. You break the law, you go to jail, then you get out, you straighten your life out, and you don't. You don't do it again, Paul. And the guys who work for the state,
yeah.
if their contract says we get a raise after this much, you get the raise. You could get that job. So could I. I didn't want to work for the state. I drive a truck for a living. I work hard. I don't break the law. I'm not going to jail.
John, let me ask you something. Would you be saying the same thing if it was your son or your daughter or your mother or your father?
Here's one. I was in jail once.
Okay.
And I called home.
Yeah.
I said, Mom, and she goes, John, where have you been?
Yeah.
And you better not say jail. I said, I'm in jail. She hung the phone up. That was the turning point of my life, 1989.
Good for you.
I did my time. I got out. I straightened my life out. I got a commercial license.
Good.
I make a good living. I'm a good... I'm a good neighbor, and I didn't do anything bad. I didn't hurt anyone.
Okay, that's good.
I was using drugs.
Okay.
They thought I was the kingpin. when I went to rehab.
Yeah.
The rehab said to me, you're the healthiest looking.
I was going to say, John, I was going to say, when you said kingpin, that you mean you look pretty good is what you're saying.
Oh, I look good. I look like a state trooper and I could speak well. And I'm not like a regular doper. And but I like to get high.
That's
but
nothing wrong with that. No, I get it.
But you can't do that. Yeah, well, I can't. But anyway, Paul, I like your show.
Thank you, sir.
And At one time, I worked at Pace Motors. Are you related to them?
No, no. Everybody thinks that. They ask me about the Pacelli Bakery, too. But, no. My clan is New Haven, East Haven.
Gotcha. But the Pace Motors,
yeah.
I worked on the loading dock, and I had just got out. They gave me a chance.
Good.
And they said you got to work on the loading dock first.
Okay.
And then you could work and drive a truck if you prove yourself.
Nice. All right, John. Listen, I do.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir, John. I do have to run. Thank you, sir. Listen, good for you. You turned it around. That was it. Here's my point. My only point is this: is jail supposed to be a country club? No, it's not. No, it's not. But I don't want to hear from the governor or anybody else. Well. Yeah, we admit this system, you know, the inmates use this, they get 10 or 12 messages a day, whatever, and it's getting too expensive. When we spend money on other cockeyed stuff in this state, and all of a sudden, nobody blinks their eye at that. I'm sorry, it's just mind-numbing. A sweetened drink tax that would tax sugary drinks, sweetened drinks, even diet drinks, sodas, fruit punches, those sports drinks, 2 cents per liquid fluid ounce for those drinks, syrups, too, powders, even on a 64-ounce big old jug of soda that you get for 79 cents, 80 cents, well, you'd be paying over $1.20 in taxes on that. Now, many Democrats of the General Assembly say, listen, it's long time to do it. And a lot of folks in Hartford and the leadership on the Democratic side saying, well, you don't have to buy a sweetened drink.
I think it's like anything. You know, when people go to Starbucks and pay $7 for a coffee, because it's what they've decided to spend their money on, that's their choice. And I feel like it's the same way with soda products.
And that is Democratic State Rep. Maura Rader. She represents she's Democrat Branford and Guilford. But on the other side, Republican State Rep. Joe Paletta, he represents the Waterbury-Watertown area. He says, bad idea.
We've heard the word zero tax increase budget over and over. And, you know, it doesn't matter which way you slice it. This is a new tax. And it is a tax on some of our most vulnerable.
All right. No big deal here. Even a lot of liberals, though, progressives are saying, hey, this is kind of regressive, especially for minorities who tend to buy these products. Joining us right now, he wrote a great piece on this. Check it out, insideinvestigator.org. Our buddy, our pal from the Connecticut Inside Investigator, Mark Fitch. Hey, Mark, it's Paul here. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, Paul.
Mark, my immediate question to this was, wait a minute now, is diet soda or anything that is diet exempted from this? I guess not, right? Because they are in a way sweetened. What's up with that?
Yeah, no, it would include diet sodas, which, you know, is heartbreaking for me. I have a bit of a Diet Coke addiction myself. But it is included because they are quote unquote sweetened beverages.
Yeah.
So it's not a sugar tax. It's a sweetened beverage tax. And so, unless it's 100% fruit juice or 100%
milk
vegetable juice
or
it's a milk product, it's going to get that tax.
Mark, let's cut to the chase right here before we get to the details. Does this kind of have a real shot here, or do you think, in your opinion, you've covered this stuff a long time, is this kind of the stuff they run up the poll and get a committee vote on just to keep people happy? Because I guess, as you point out, no other state does this, right?
Yeah, this would be the first. If we did it, we'd be the first state in the country to do it. Cities have done it: Philadelphia, Seattle, San Francisco. They've done it,
mm-hmm.
but as far as a state, we would be the first one. Now, whether or not this actually has a chance, I think it's got a bit of an uphill climb. I mean, this isn't the first time that they've tried to do this. It isn't even the first time that Governor Lamont has tried to do this. What's really kind of, I mean, you've got everybody, you know, all the major associations against it, the Restaurant Association, Business Association, the Grocery Association, the Beverage Association, none of them want this. But here's the kicker, and this is why it does have a much better chance than in the past when these ideas were floated to just fill budgets, is that the money from this tax would be used to fund free universal school meals. So, you know, you wouldn't have to pack the kid a lunch anymore. You wouldn't have to pay for lunch at the school anymore. The kid just goes, gets it. It's like the immediate post-COVID era when the kids went back to school and school lunches were covered using ARPA dollars. This, you know, this tax, which would bring in probably about $200 million a year, would be used to support that.
That's the estimate, $200 million a year?
I should clarify that is my estimate on, well, it's based on Lamont's 2019 proposal. Back in 2019, he wanted a 1.5 cents per ounce. That would bring in about $160 million per year back then. So at 2 cents an ounce, you're looking at about $200 million.
So that's interesting, Mark. And I haven't seen anybody market it that way. But if I'm trying to sell this, yeah, I would say, hey, look, folks, we know you like, some of you like to make lunch or make breakfast. Like, you wouldn't have to do that. I wonder if they will, as the push for this goes on, if they think it's on a hairline for a vote, Mark, say, hey, this is going to save you money in the long run, because you're not having to buy lunch or dinner for your kids.
Yeah, and that would, you know, that is probably a big selling point. There has been a big push to institute universal school meals in Connecticut since COVID. And, you know, it's always been a money issue, you know, $100 million bucks, that's about what it would cost. That's, you know, a lot to come up with when you're dealing with the fiscal guardrails and everything.
Yeah.
So, that is the real kicker. And that's why I find the argument about it very interesting, is because people have to weigh one thing against the other. You know, it's all right, I'm going to get hit with these extra costs at the grocery store for buying my Diet Coke or whatever. But, you know, my four kids can go to school and just get their food, and I don't have to actually like pack them a lunch anymore.
Mark Fitch is the guest, Inside Investigator. CT Inside Investigator is the site. And Mark, the other interesting dynamic here is, and I guess the other side with Maura Rader said, listen, it's about consumer choice. So, and Mark, I am with you on Diet Coke. Believe me, been there, done that. But actually, Mark, and I drink a ton of water a day too. But, you know, Mark, if we don't like the tax, we don't have to buy it, right? I mean, that's a selling point too.
Well, that's, you know, that's very true. But here's the problem is that if that does play out, what happens when they're not bringing in enough money to support the school lunches?
Well, there
I mean,
you
what
go.
Happens
yeah.
Then?
Yep. Well, it's like, well, Mark, it's like, isn't it kind of like the same thing with EVs, right? And the gasoline tax. Hey, go to EVs. Hey, wait a minute now. We need a mileage tax because not enough people are buying gas. Same kind of thing, right?
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah. And then that's something we looked at. One of the reasons that for the big tolls push was that, you know, hey, they're making more fuel efficient cars. Now we're not getting as much gas tax revenue. Now we have to go, you know, find some other way to get that money. So, yeah, it is a trade. It would be a big trade off.
Yeah.
And, you know, people have to make that decision whether they think this is a good idea or not. Or there's always the possibility that, hey, there's maybe other ways you could get the money to do universal school lunch, you know, other than doing this kind of tax. But this is what they've come up with for the moment.
Yeah. And Mark, finally, I know you said it's about a 50-50 roll. Listen, I would buy stock, you and I, in all these supermarkets right over the line in New York, in Massachusetts, and in Rhode Island, right? Just right? It's,
well, you know,
it's like the state liquor stores in New Hampshire, right?
Yeah, well, and that's something that came up during public hearing is that we have a problem with people coming across the border to redeem their cans and bottles because we've got the 10-cent redemption now.
Uh-huh.
They, you know, potentially other people could be doing the same thing. You go right across the border to Massachusetts, buy like a few cases of your Diet Coke, come back, and you're set for a month.
Right? All right, well, check it out. Hey, listen, folks, check out the story and all the great stuff that the Inside Investigator does. It's at insideinvestigator.org. The story, Connecticut floats soda tax to support free school meals. Our buddy, our pal, Mark Fitch. Mark, thanks. Appreciate it. Be good, and we'll check down the road.
Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate it. It's our weekly Tuesday check-in. Check out Megan Portfolio, the Hartford Portfolio, the blog at the Yankee Institute, and Megan, I would guess, is all bubbly and excited because it's tax day 2025. Are you celebrating? How do you feel today?
Yeah, I'm going to be celebrating when I hang up with you by actually doing my taxes.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't done them yet.
Really?
You know, Paul, when you watch all the crap that I have to watch with the government, it makes me really not want to do my taxes until the absolute last second.
So are you doing these online, or will you be running to your local post office?
No, I'll just do them online, and it hurts my soul, especially if I owe someone a check.
I made out okay with the fact. Well, see, what I do is I over withhold. So, like, I do my, you know, whatever filing withholds the most, and then I fill out my stuff here at work and say, well, hold more, just in case. So this way I go through the pain, Megan. I increase my pain all throughout the year.
I don't know if I have the fiscal discipline, but I've always wanted to just, like, not pay it every out of my paycheck and just send them a check and then, like, invest that money and so make some interest. And then, but I don't know if I have the fiscal discipline. I sound like our lawmakers that want to break our guardrails.
By the way, speaking of, there's a segue. Now, you have two pieces here. Before we get to something from a state legislator, let's talk about your piece that says, I regret to inform you that it's tax day, and you've summed up some rather interesting numbers for us here in Connecticut. So what do you have on that?
Yeah, well, I was prompted to write this based on my own experience right now of not doing my taxes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, gee, I wonder where Connecticut ranks. Like, if I look at all the, because all these organizations, they do these rankings from all the states, all different organizations. I'm like, oh, let me just compile them all together to get me really filed up before I actually file.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not good. We got Tax Foundation study, most recent study for property taxes. We're the worst, which, by the way, today the Democrats have decided that we need to have a mansion tax because is there a number worse than 50th in the country? I mean, I guess we could be worse, the worst in the universe for property taxes. Is that the next goal?
Yeah.
Yeah, corporate taxes were the 31st worst, and that's just a tax foundation. And then there's Wallet Hub. We're the highest, we're the state with the 10th highest with the tax burden.
Yeah.
And that's Wallet Hub. I think I talked about this on your show maybe last week. The rate of return of our taxes, according to Wallet Hub, we're awful. We're, for what we're paying, we have the 8th highest tax burdens, and we're not getting a bang for our buck there. And it just goes on and on. U-Haul. Did a study. We're 41st out of 50th for net migration. And the guy that did the study, you know, he attributes a lot of the people moving down south to the, you know, the lower tax states because they are living in states in the Northeast that are, or California that are high tax. And Heritage Foundation, they just had one. If you tax them, they will run. And that was another. They showed that we lost over 21,000 residents just to Florida and Texas.
Wow.
In 2023. It goes on and on. And IRS backs it up. I mean, they between 2021 and 2022, we lost $1 billion. For people, they just left Connecticut to move to, you know, lower tax states. So, I mean, this isn't my opinion or propaganda. This is like different organizations are saying this. CNBC, cost of doing business in the state, we're the 43rd worst. Business friendliness, we're the 39th worst. Cost of living, we're the 34th worst. It just goes on and on and on.
And Megan, again, a lot of people, for whatever reason, lazy, they don't care, they like this, they just send the same people from the same party every 2 years or every 4 years up to Hartford, and this is nothing personal, but the numbers show it, these are the same people driving this state down a fiscal rat hole. But again, they don't care. They don't know, they don't care. It's amazing.
And they don't really know how the sausage is made, like with the media. Some media is friendly to the government and will only report one-sided things, and things are great. And, you know, it's all the rich people's fault that we're in the situation that we're in.
Yeah.
And it's just because I worked in politics a little bit, and it takes a lot. I mean, it's a full it literally is a full-time job. I get paid to watch the government, and and people don't have the time. They, you know, they work and they expect their media to give them, you know, unbiased information. And unfortunately, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, but
someone knocks on their door, they're like, "Hey, I'm so and so. I'm running for office. I'm a nice person." And they're like, "Oh yeah, they're great. I'm going to vote for them.
Yeah,
they were nice
go.
And they came to my door."
There you go. And they knock on my door, and I say, "Get out." No, I'm sorry.
I love when they come to my door.
Well, again, and Megan, I've always said this, and people laugh when I say it, but there is a cadre of voter here in the state, and I tell them on this show all the time. You need to take a look, do a little bit of a deeper dive. There's a gazillion websites you can find this. Don't vote for somebody, some guy or some gal or some party, because they show up at your son's or daughter's rubber chicken Little League banquet.
Yeah, that's well said, Paul.
Yeah, hey, it's great to see you again. You know, have the guts to say, hey, it's good to see you, but I was really disappointed in your vote on that tax bill. Why did you vote that way? But they know, Megan, most of the people, sadly, they don't know or they don't care. And it's mind-boggling.
Well, and it's also not as sexy as, you know, tuning into, like, Fox News or CNN and watching, like, the stuff take place on the national level. I mean, it is more interesting on the national level than it is, you know, for, you know, some of the stuff that I cover is really dry. I try to make it, you know, as entertaining as possible. You know, pension debt isn't really, like, that sexy of a topic, but pension debt is one of the main reasons why our taxes are so high.
You know, I go to my weekly meetings with my two programming bosses here, and they're usually on Tuesdays. And, you know, hey, what's coming up today, blah, 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 blah. And I have, you know, Megan Portfolio on, and I explain. I say, yeah, and my bosses said, she's really good. It's a good segment. And I said, do you believe she actually sits there and reads these bills, like hundreds of pages? And one of my bosses goes, oh, my God. Does she? I said, yeah. She sits there and finds stuff on page 236, line 990.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now is the real fun time because the fiscal analysis reports come out. So then we get to see how much all of this nonsense is going to cost us.
All right. Finally, I want to wrap up with this. And I laughed. I guess one of our more, shall we say, left-leaning progressive lawmakers from not a low-income area, from a rather high-income area, said something that was caught on a hot mic today that many of her constituents may like, but they may not like. Who are we talking about here?
Oh, our friend Representative Hughes, who serves Easton, Reading, and Weston. So Rep. Hughes doesn't realize that. So I watch a lot of CTN.
Yeah.
And I've been watching a lot of CTN for years.
Okay.
And after every press conference, CTN keeps the cameras rolling and the mics are on.
And the mics are hot, yes.
And I literally if people laugh at me because they're like, why are you sleeping? I'm like, no, I'm trying to hear the background because they're talking and it picks it up on the mic and I'm looking for what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And it finally paid out for me today. So there was a press conference today. It was the Tax Equity Caucus. So when you hear the word equity, I don't need to go explain that, but they're talking about how they want to have a mansion tax. They want increased capital gains tax and then some child tax credit that they're supporting.
Yeah.
Press conference is over. Cameras are rolling. Rep. Hughes is high-fiving Representative Kit, I think her name is. She's new. She's a rep from Fairfield.
Okay.
And they're high-fiving, you know, because why not high-five on tax day and talk about raising taxes? And then all of a sudden I hear, we're not rich, but I always tell the governor to tax my people. They won't even notice. So I'm just curious, Paul, to your listeners in Easton, Reading, and Weston.
There you go.
Do they not notice when their taxes go up? But I'll tell you what, I noticed when she said that, and I quickly banged out the article.
You can
catch it out on our website.
Yes, that is hysterical. And you know, when I was working on a couple of campaigns years and years ago, I had a rule because I was the media person, and I said the minute we walk into a studio or any room with a microphone there that you may not know is hot or otherwise, you keep your mouth shut. If you're asked a question, you answer the question and you say nothing else. And even if it's over, you assume the mics are hot.
That's like rule number one. Rule number two, watch what you eat because pictures, you can make real funny memes out of certain pictures of people eating certain items.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, you can. All right, folks, check this out. Hot mic, Representative Hughes, quote, tax my people. They won't even notice. Ah, yes. From Megan Portfolio, the Hartford Portfolio, and the Yankee Institute. Megan, be good. Have a happy weekend, and we'll chat with you next week. Thanks.
Okay, bye, Paul.
All right, bye-bye. There you go. Well, there you go, folks. We have a pro right here, CBS legal analyst, correspondent Thane Rosenbaum, stopping by. He was on earlier today with Lisa. Want to bring him back for a couple of developing things. Thane, it's Paul here. Good afternoon. How are you?
Great hearing you, Paul.
Hey, Thane, couple of things here. Number one, you were right, and I think you nailed this right on the head when we talked, I think, a couple of months ago or weeks ago about this Mahmoud Khalil situation. And I know you and other legals were saying, hey, this is an immigration court, not a regular court or a court for a regular citizen of the U.S. Are you surprised that the immigration court said, hey, no, if they want to bounce you out of here, they can?
No, I thought that, you know, this is the thing. Everyone was focusing on the wrong thing. The First Amendment, wrong thing. Green card, wrong thing. You can focus on it all day. You can scream First Amendment all day. But there is a statute that grants the Secretary of State the right to revoke green cards and legal residencies if he or she unilaterally decides. He's the Secretary of State, or she, whoever that may be, that what you're engaged in, your activities prejudice, adversely affect my foreign policy. I'm the man for foreign policy, and you're messing around with it. And now I'm kicking you out and goodbye. And it sounds harsh, but that's why Rubio all along, he just looked at everyone like, you're out of your mind. If you don't think I have the right to do this, watch me. Because, you know, I wouldn't have been able to, it's the real old story that people got, you know, didn't remember, which is, you know, you're not a citizen. You're here at the invitation. You know, why do you think you're entitled to everything that a citizen would get? You're not a citizen of this country. And the fact that you could be married to someone is, that's nice.
Yeah.
You have a green card, very lovely, but it doesn't grant you the rights of a citizenship. And more importantly, even if you argued that I'm entitled to the same First Amendment rights as my next door neighbor who is a citizen, it wouldn't matter because the Secretary of State has deemed you a threat to our foreign policy. So that's why you're leaving. And that's, you know, and then, of course, the other issue I think we probably talked about is the First Amendment issue is really, you know, again, something that has been casually said.
Yeah.
But there's no First Amendment right to engage in conduct and activity that is threatening, harassing to other people. They're simply not. And so, you know, everyone goes, these were not peaceful protests. He was not a leader of a peace. He was the head of an organization at Columbia that called for the overthrow of all American and Western societies. He was not here, and he was here for the purposes. He may have gotten a degree, but he was here for something else. And that's what Rubio is enforcing.
Yeah. Thane, finally, I see this story here. The Trump White House sued. What a shock. Get in line. It's like the deli line, just like the deli counter. Now serving number 53. White House gets sued over tariffs in the U.S. Court of International Trade. What is that?
So that's an interesting court. It is under the court system. When you and I talked 3 weeks ago, I said immigration judges work for the executive branch,
okay,
the administrative judges.
Yeah.
This is a court that's an Article III court. They're like a federal court, and they resolve disputes relating to international trade.
Uh-huh.
The thing that's here is that you're having a bunch of American small businessmen who are saying Donald Trump's tariffs are making it impossible for us to stay in business because we're small businessmen. And so we're American citizens, and we're trying to be in business. And the president has overstepped his authority by imposing tariffs when, in fact, taxes is a congressional matter. It's not for presidents. So this guy, they're just saying, you have engaged in activity that is making us impossible, and we're trying to put a stop, essentially, at telling them to get a court order to enjoin the president from stopping his tariff policies. Donald Trump's position is there is a federal statute that deals with special economic emergency rights that a president has during economic emergencies. And he is now claiming that our trade imbalances and certainly the treatment with China is an economic emergency. Now, I don't know where that's going to go.
Mm.
A court's going to have to rule on that. Does the president write that he can rely on? Yes, he's not Congress. But when it comes to, you know, when it comes to the words emergency, even from the early days of our founding, you know, that's why terrorism gets special treatment. National security gets special treatment. You say the word emergency, it always grants more power to the chief executive. Mm-hmm. And that's what this is. This is the same situation here. President is saying, I'm dealing with an international economic emergency, and this is the only relief that I can think of, tariffs.
Thane Rosenbaum, CBS News legal analyst. Thane, thank you. Appreciate it. Take
Anytime,
care, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you. Thane Rosenbaum there. Great stuff.